Hey, everybody. Welcome to This Week in Pre-IPO Stocks podcast. With me, I got Nick Fusco, CEO of 8View, a pre-IPO secondary market pricing company, and Evan Cohen, co-founder and chief operating officer of Vincent.com. It's a media company focused on alternative investments. All right, fellas, we got AI phones. That's the buzz this week. Johnny Ive, Sam Altman are in the news. Sam Altman, of course, is the CEO of OpenAI. They're looking to raise $1 billion for a phone. They're not calling it a phone. It's not going to look like that. It's going to be some kind of like AI first device, maybe something like the Humane AI pen or that rabbit. So Altman's a big investor in Humane. So this is like a thing. There's some buzz that maybe OpenAI is the operating system for this device, right? Evan, let's start with you. Like, what do you think about an AI first device? Is this something you could get into and maybe use?
I mean, I absolutely think if you future looking, having AI on your person, in whether that's a physical device or somewhere that you can access it anywhere, seems very, very plausible and likely the future. So whether it's a phone or a pin or a headset, like I believe that AI is going to be automated into everything that we do. The fact that Joni Ive and Sam Altman are teaming up is quite interesting. I mean, they're both probably the leaders of their respective fields when it comes to this sort of thing. And the fact that some of the investors have Apple ties is also quite interesting. Right. That said, you know, hardware is a very different business. It's very expensive. You know, we haven't really seen the localized compute really happen yet. So there's a lot of opportunity, but I think this is, you know, a lot of hot air right now. I haven't seen anything that concrete that makes me very excited. Unlike, you know, the Apple Vision Pro, which we talked about a few months ago on the show, where that feels like a much more real future paradigm of computing, the next computing paradigm versus, say, right, you know, an AI hardware device.
Right, right. Okay, so Nick, I know we've talked about devices and you have strong opinions, my friend, on these kind of things. Well, so I'm kind of curious, what would you think about an AI first of all? I remember us talking about Humane, the AI pen. I don't think you were super bullish on it, but have you changed like your thoughts around it, or like what do you think?
I'm definitely not going to flip on that at this point. I mean, I've even seen some of the more recent videos of the Humane pen. It's interesting. It's a nice toy. But is it going to be the next evolution of things? No, I think Evan's got a point with, you know, it's very different than something like the Apple Vision Pro, which I feel is the next really cool toy. But then you bring this thing in whether it's the rabbit or the Humane pen, I think there are a couple necessary steps before that's logical.
Right.
So yeah, I'll remain that I'm not a huge fan, even if they are raising a significant amount of money at significant valuations. But is the technology truly worth it for how much advancement it brings? No, I don't think it's like coming out with the brand new iPhone, which everyone saw immediately as an incredible transformation, even with
right,
the Series
yes.
1.
Yeah. To just add to that, you know, I feel like unlike software, the moats around hardware, specifically mobile devices, is so tough to overcome. I mean, it really is a Apple and Android ecosystem out there. And if you're trying to break into that ecosystem and compete against Apple or Google, it's going to be a very big uphill battle. And I don't even think $1 billion really does it. We've seen other handset makers have billions of dollars in the war chest and just burn it really fast trying to compete. Right. I don't think this is the sort of thing that people are going to have multiple devices on. They're going to want to limit the number of hardware devices that they own and are carrying around with them. And I don't think that Apple or Android are going anywhere. So unless they can figure out to get their software onto those devices, I think it's going to be a very challenging market to break into.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a paradigm shift. I mean, I would say like, so I'm 43 years old, right? I mean, when I was born, there were phones connected to a wall still, right? So, I mean, you think about the progression of how we engage with technology from when I was born till this point. And like, to your point, Nick, like the iPhone coming out was a pretty monumental thing. Although I do remember when the iPhone first came out, everyone was kind of like, this is a yawner. And then the apps came and everyone was like, oh, I got to have this. Like the App Store really made that thing pop and sing. So it'd be interesting to see if there's like, you know, a use case or an application where this thing pops, right?
Yeah. So that's what the Humane Pen is pushing right now. I mean, there's going to be a bit of open architecture so you can create apps off the back end of it. Like when you go to their demos right now, you put your hand out in front and it's going to shoot the laser into your hand and tell you with the NVIDIA stock price. But if it could be programmed from you to really do whatever you want, or you purchase the app in their app store, to do more. Okay, that's kind of cool. But I don't think that's going to be so revolutionary or so different than the failure of the Snapchat Ray-Ban sunglasses.
Yeah, right.
You know, you know, I don't know that a pin is better than sunglasses, better than a Apple Vision Pro.
I have my eye on the Rabbit, this like large action model that Rabbit has. I mean, they have this device, but it actually, I think their secret sauce is like this large action model, which I'm like dying to get my hands on. I bought one of these things. It hasn't come yet, but like supposedly you can like go on, like you train like an Excel macro. I don't know if anyone's ever done that. I used to do that, right?
Like, oh yeah, I did like, a lot of that.
You press for play sure. And then you do things in the spreadsheet and you can run the macro and it will repeat those things. That's effectively what they've done, as far as I understand, for the web, right? Which is super cool, where you don't have to do any code. And then if there's some kind of parlay to a device where I could somehow like integrate that into these large actual model like macros that I'm running, that's could be super interesting. And I could see myself carrying something around to do that, right?
I like that more. I absolutely like that more. We can, if you could train it to go fetch something, go get the door.
Yeah.
Like working around the house for you.
So I anticipate there's going to be a whole bunch of companies in this like device space, right? For AI, kind of AI first device, like interesting investment opportunity. I know you've done some stuff in hardware in the past, like interesting, not interesting. Like, what do you think?
So I think it's interesting, but I will say the consumer hardware is generally a very, very challenging market to enter. And actually, you know, the more that I think about it, like OpenAI has really been a more business-driven B2B sort of software play, although they do, ChatGPT does have a direct-to-consumer component. Yeah. So, you know, now if we're thinking of like, you know, the Microsoft integration, OpenAI, maybe this is a business device, maybe this is an augmented reality headset where you could add AI into it that you could see a ton of different data while you're processing physical actions. That's super compelling. So, you know, yeah. I think if there's a B2B opportunity from a hardware perspective, that's substantially more safe bet if you're an investor. If it's a direct to consumer play, you know, you got to have millions and millions of devices, massive distribution, very expensive sales channels, cost of acquisition is very high. You know, it's just a much more risky bet. And I don't invest in consumer hardware.
Okay, got it. Okay, cool. So let's hit, I got two more, I actually had three more topics, but let's save some time for Rubik at the end. But let's hit on XAI and Klarna real quick. So Nick, XAI is out raising a round right now, $3 billion, $18 billion post-money valuation. They just released Grok 1.5, so it's like their AI large language model. It's only going through X. You got to pay the premium or premium plus subscribers. I checked that out this morning. So that's $8 or $16 per month to get access to it. So that's less than the ChatGPT, $20 per month to get kind of the premier model or better model. I'm getting calls from everybody to buy this stuff. So it's pretty clear to me that XAI is not using investment bank. They're using venture capital firms to raise this money. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing on your side with the data kind of in the secondary market? Are you seeing similar? A lot of stuff coming through?
You know what? Immediately when you sent some notes around, I pulled up Anthropic and we're actually seeing very similar valuations on that. Anthropic model-wise, I think would actually be relatively a fair bit cheaper. So that's more of the interesting one. But we're definitely seeing a lot more buy activity on Twitter than we are on X than we are on anything else in terms of ratio basis.
Yeah.
But no, I don't know. I think you're definitely going to have some Elon fans that want to buy anything Elon, you know, maybe with the exception of the Boring Company. And then he's pricing it directly competitively with, in terms of the round with Anthropic. Mm-hmm. And that makes a compelling argument to say, is it going to be OpenAI first and then maybe Grok, or OpenAI first and maybe Anthropic, or, you know, who's going to win that duopoly spot? So I think he's smart there with that valuation. I personally don't know if I would get involved with it. I'd kind of prefer Anthropic, which is much more purpose built, but it's great. Good.
What do you think about, like, so XAI is really the only large language model shop that I can think of that has like a proprietary data source in X data, Twitter data, right? And there could be like discussions about how good that data is. So is that, from an investment thesis perspective, is that interesting? Do you think that's going to play out, or that's going to help them win? To your point earlier, these all look like they're business to business plays, right? So is it going to be to the extent that XAI can sell to more businesses than OpenAI or Anthropic, or kind of get their piece of the market?
I mean, absolutely. I think the most interesting thing about Grok and xAI compared to all the other LLM models is they have a built-in distribution channel that has a business model that is somewhat subsidizing the cost of the model, right? This is the first time we've seen a major LLM product priced inside another app or a subscription that you already pay for. I've always said that I don't see a world where consumers are paying $20 a month for AI services like they pay for Netflix or the other subscriptions. I always felt that the business model for these AI tools would be embedded into a broader product. Like I think Google has an opportunity to do advertising. I think Facebook's obviously going the open source model. And the fact that Grok, their business model is integrated into the Twitter services. And we've talked about Twitter on the show many times about the other business opportunities of a media empire that they're trying to build there. I think it's very compelling, let alone the proprietary data source, which gives it a lot of really interesting information that you can't really get elsewhere. Yeah. I do believe that when it comes to these foundation models, which Grok, Anthropic, OpenAI, et cetera, I think that those are all going to be commoditized at some point in the future. There's only so much data that they can train on, and it'll ultimately all get commoditized. And so when you think about commoditization, what's the differentiator? Distribution. And, you know, OpenAI has Microsoft. And I think that the fact that Grok has Twitter or X as a distribution channel and an interesting business model on top of it, very compelling for me.
Yeah. I would like to see like an xAI, like a Grok app, for what it's worth. Like now you have to go to X to access Grok. I think it would be interesting to just have a Grok, you know, app, like its own dedicated app. That actually,
I don't disagree. Yeah. But I think, I was talking to a friend yesterday who was asking me, hey, like, which AI service providers do you pay for? And for work, I do pay for Anthropic, Claude, and I do pay for OpenAI. But now that, you know, I know this person already has a Twitter Blue or an X premium subscription, and I'm definitely going to tell him the next time I see him, is like, why would you pay for one of these foundation models here when you could get it already built into the service you're already paying for? So it doesn't cost you anything incrementally more. That's a very compelling use case for some of the AI products that are just general use, not very specific use.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would agree with that for general use, but to a certain extent, I mean, the biggest value is going to come from those hard to get data points, which are going to be few through things like, the best example is GitHub, owned by Microsoft, right? Think about when you're using this for coding use cases, and then think about how much it costs for access to Twitter Blue, or even just Twitter is free, versus the access to LinkedIn Premium. You're paying 10x because the quality of the data on that is probably significantly
Fair
higher.
Point.
So that's point. Where I think the proprietary aspect, you know what? You're right. The general, they're all going to be the same in a while, but for really solid proprietary data, you're not going to have these big firms let go of that. And then you've got these free agents out there, like we discussed this on Reddit, will be really interesting down the road for who they want to sell to, you know? And then it's also going to depend on how Grok could reshape how Twitter does or doesn't resell any of their information for sentiment analysis or to hedge funds, things like that. Maybe they jack the price up on that too. So a lot of interesting dynamics in terms of data ownership and how they want to express that for purchase or through their own apps and AI tooling.
Yeah.
But there's going to be a data war here, already is.
In my opinion, these large language model and kind of AI companies are increasingly becoming business to business place. So whoever's going to have the biggest business to business relationship, the biggest developer network, right? Developers are comfortable with their APIs and use their APIs. And I think those are being the people that will end up with the most revenue and kind of the biggest valuations in the long run. I mean, I think it's great to do this direct to consumer thing. I think the revenue is going to be with businesses and helping, making them more efficient, right? And adding value to them, right? So that's kind of my take.
Well, Aaron, let me ask you this. If you were a Twitter investor, how do you feel about this, or an X investor? Because I feel like Grok spinning out and having its own cap table and its own, you know, massive valuations, and the fact that its revenue model is so tied to X right now, it kind of makes it feel like the value of X isn't as valuable anymore.
So X owns 25% of xAI. At least that's what the buzz has been out in the media. So, I mean, that's good. I mean, maybe if I'm a X shareholder, I'm like, am I okay? I don't anticipate they're going to sell their data to other people like Reddit's going to do. It looks like Reddit's going to sell it to like everybody, right? Or a lot of different people. You know, like it, in X's case, it looks like they're going to sell their data to XAI and they're getting 25% of the company from that. So this isn't really like, hey, we're going to have this data and monetize the data through all these different, you know, kind of in the marketplace. We'll see who can pay us the most and how, and we'll segment that up and slice it up and give different data pieces to different people. That's not what they're doing. They're just doing it with XAI. So like, to the extent that XAI can generate a big return, which it probably can, it's just got to win. I think XAI has to win on a business to business level. And then if they do that, it'd be like $100, $200, $250 billion business. And if they own 25% of it, that's like a $50 billion business. There's what's wrong with that, you know? So, you know, hopefully the other parts of X's business will rebound. I don't know if they're going to rebound back up to the $44 billion that Elon paid for it. Elon Musk paid for it. But if you do that plus the XAI portion, I mean, that could be $100 billion business.
Yeah. I mean, so, I just feel like for those investors that invested in the $44 billion round to see this sort of technology, another business spun out of Twitter, getting Twitter's proprietary data, extracting value out of Twitter without, you know, that value getting accrued to those initial investors, just feels uncomfortable to me.
Oh, no. Well, no, I think it is. It's, they got 25% of the XAI. I think that's the point you got to feel salty about. It's like, is this a good strategy to give it to one company? Or should you give it to many different companies? And I think they've made that decision to give it to one. So they're still getting something. It's just they've kind of made their bet.
Yeah. And
hopefully it works out for them.
They needed capital. You weren't just going to pull the capital that wasn't even available out of X to go for it. So I think it was a thoughtful structure to how they went about it. It's just a matter of are they going to be highly competitive? And is the one major source going to work in the long run, or is that how they're going to start? And then eventually X is going to sell data to everybody more like a Reddit style model.
Fair point. They could sell it to other people. That's a fair point. Yeah. We'll see how that shakes out. All right. Let's talk Klarna and Rubrik real quick. So Klarna, they came out with this new, report that basically is making a play stating that buy now, pay later is better than revolving credit card. And I got to tell you, all of my financial advisor buddies are like, hate buy now, pay later, like visceral reaction, right? So I find this so interesting because in my opinion, a buy now, pay later is like an installment loan. For those that don't know, it's like with Klarna, at least you do it like pay in four. So there's no interest. You just kind of, you buy something for $100, you pay $25 a pop for 4 weeks in a row and you're done. Like, what's wrong with that? Better than a revolving credit card, I think. So Klarna came out with all these stats. They, you know, basically this, you can look for yourself. You just look up, it's called WikiPink, W-I-K-I Pink. But the long and the short of it is credit cards are horrible and they have a whole bunch of stats that support that. And buy now, pay later is great. And they have a whole bunch of stats that support that, right? So maybe what I would offer, ask you guys, maybe Nick, you can go first. Like, you know, Klarna has gotten totally beat up in the market, right? They had to go to market and do a raise like at just the worst possible time, but it's gotten better since they did that last round about 2 years ago. It's gotten significantly better from a valuation perspective. You know, what do you think of this business and kind of where they're at today? And there's some buzz about an IPO. Maybe if you have any thoughts on that, that would be cool to hear too.
So In and around your comments on raising at the worst possible point, I mean, they were the guinea pigs, right? Klarna was one of the first to come out and do that round at the most inopportune time, mid to late 2022, right? So They took it, investors wrote the position down, and since then they've been recovering pretty well. So that's positive. In terms of what the IPO prospects are, I think this might be a little bit of a longer road, but if they go for it, they've reset that valuation. I think investors know what to expect. And I think they are now becoming a proper competitive tooling versus credit cards, which is great.
Right.
Like I love competition. I'm not going to say I love Klarna. I'd prefer to get those credit card points and rack those up when I buy something rather than paying installments. But for a good subsection of their consumers, I think it probably does work really well. You space things out over time, but also as you accumulate more and more of these, maybe we call it a rolling payment as opposed to the exact terms you'd want to use on the credit card, rolling monthly, they will eventually get people in the same sorts of trouble as credit card. I think so. So it'll be interesting to see. It's nice that the default rates are way lower. So that's good. And they're coming out looking like heroes at Klarna. But I think eventually this is going to have issue. But for the time being, great. You have something competitive. I like it. It's a good company. They're doing the right things management-wise right now, it seems like, and hoping this will be a good IPO eventually when it comes.
Right. Okay. Evan, what do you think? What do you think of Klarna, perhaps just as a business and kind of IPO prospects here? Is it a buy, in your opinion?
It's probably not a buy for me at this moment. Klarna started in Europe. And Europe, you know, unlike the United States, they just have a different approach to credit and debt. So it made a lot more sense where it was much more successful in Europe. And they are entering the United States market, and it seems to be going pretty well. But the thing that I find very interesting is, like, whenever I think of Klarna, I think about the company that raised at like a $44 billion valuation during the Zerp era. And it was just like way over its skis in valuation. And for me, it's hard to digest that even today, even though they have, you know, they did take the medicine early. They did reset their valuation early, and they are sort of growing into the proper valuation that they're probably supposed to be at now. I do agree with Nick that I think competition is great, and buy now, pay later is a competitive market outside of the credit card business. So I do think that it's one of those things that the wallet share for all of these different payment businesses is just getting super, super competitive, whether it's Apple Pay or Google Pay or Klarna or Stripe or anything like this. It's just super, super competitive. And I think in the United States, you know, we have a different system here where you get credit card points, you get rewarded for spending in the credit card network. And I just don't think that's going away. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw Robinhood launched their 3% all-in credit card. I think it was like last week or 2 weeks ago, and it was going viral on Twitter because people were very excited about the opportunity to get 3% cash back on everything you spend. Yeah. I think the credit crisis in the United States is a little overblown in terms of the way that the media perceives it. But at the same time, I also believe that there are a lot of people that have the struggle with credit, and the credit system is old and antiquated. And the idea that people can get loans without having to rely on their credit scores is a good thing. And I think Klarna and Affirm and Afterpay are solving a market need, and it's being shown in their numbers and their growth. Do I think that this is a company I would want to invest in the pre-IPO? No, I'd probably wait for it to go to the public markets, see what happens there, and then buy it for the long haul.
Got it. Okay, Nick, let's hit Rubrik real quick, because I know you got to scoot here in like 5 minutes, man. So if you put together a report, would you mind just kind of running us through Rubrik and your thoughts there?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to download the latest report from Ifyu on Rubrik, data security firm partnering with all the best data giants from AWS to Google and Azure, take a look on ifyu.com. But we know that IPO is coming. We really want to take a look under the hood to see what is the institutional activity on the name. A lot of what we're seeing is colored kind of smaller institutional activity. So these are bids, offers, trades that are occurring in kind of like the 1 to 5 million range, which is interesting for a company of this size. And size here being in excess of a $4 billion valuation. You're simultaneously seeing the valuation slightly come off, but actually be really quite steady coming into any IPO, which is really interesting. But we do have some 40 Act fund activity marking the name down. So that's going to potentially apply some negative pressure. So really just pointing out that the activity on the name is really kind of going in the right direction for a while now, despite some hiccups over the last 2-3 months. And this should raise in excess of the last round, which is nice, but they really haven't raised a whole lot of money in the last few years. So I think the last round here was quite a while back. So I think we were not terribly bullish on Reddit, which has performed well and since backed off a bit, but I'm more bullish on this Rubrik IPO, which will be great to see.
Hmm. Interesting. Evan, any thoughts on Rubrik?
You know, I totally agree with what Nick said. I think that the markets are thawing. I think that the growth hasn't been really interesting from my perspective. I think it's been relatively muted and, you know, perfectly fine, not like something explosive. But I think the markets are excited about IPOs again. And I think that this will probably have a nice pop when it goes to the market.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really interested. I don't know if I have strong opinions one way or the other on this business, but I'm interested to see on how it comes to market versus where the secondary market valuation is, like that implied valuation relative to where it actually IPOs. Because I increasingly keep hearing people talk about that. And I think there's like a relationship there? Like what's going on in the private secondary market is impacting the price that the IPOs go out at least to some degree. It might not be like a one-to-one, right? But I definitely think there's a correlation there.
It's very near the one-to-one. I mean, you're plus or minus 10% in most cases plus, the IPO will be higher, open will be higher. But I think this is also a litmus test for Databricks, which is much more hotly anticipated, a lot more, bid volume, a lot larger lot sizes as well. So yeah, I think everybody's looking at this to see what's going on.
Well, how do you feel though, guys? We've talked about it on the show, the idea that these IPOs are sort of pricing where the secondary market is, but when they go public, they're being valued 2x what the market is, and the market's being okay with that. So yep. What do you guys think?
The market's never wrong, in my opinion.
So, yeah, I think the secondary market, despite the liquidity that we know exists here, you're getting significant liquidity the moment it's going public. So you're going to have an illiquidity discount for private versus public. They are popping, but to a certain extent, they also settle back closer to where you had the secondary market activity. So I think the relationship is quite tight. And even when you look at some kind of like the head and shoulders analysis, you're starting to see that there is a relationship of what occurred in the last year or two in the private markets to what's occurring concurrently in the public. So it's almost like, you know, if someone wants to stitch together a time series connecting private markets over to public markets, you're potentially going to be able to fool yourself and thinking this name has been public for a while. You know, the exact like volatility in the name on a daily, weekly, monthly basis is not going to look quite the same, but the trends will definitely be there.
Yeah.
I mean, are you a buyer? Are you an investor?
I don't have strong opinions about this company, but I am glad that these IPOs are happening and that they're, you know, popping kind of in the public markets. I mean, that's obviously a positive thing for all these companies that are in the queue, if you will. I mean, I'm a big believer that the public markets are efficient, right? So if these things run up, there's demand. People want them. It might sound crazy or the fundamentals might not work, but the market's supply and demand driven, right? So the market will kind of ultimately settle on a valuation that's right for them, a revenue multiple that's right for them. So,
And we also don't have the ability to short a newly IPO'd company as well, right? So you are seeing some of these IPOs run up.
There's lockups. Yeah, that's true.
You've got your lockup period for the first X number of days, and then you see these things settle out. So I want to see how Reddit goes. Definitely saw that with Instacart. We've got a few more names in the pipe. So
that's the right. More got to give it like through the blackout period, 6 to 9 months.
The 6 months. Yeah.
All right, fellas, let's end it there. Nick, I know you got to.
Thank you very much.